a thought about seeds from our very first president, George Washington. Bad seed is a robbery of the worst kind, for your pocketbook not only suffers by it, but your preparations are lost and a season passes away unimproved. This thought leads us to ask, which seed should we start?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 724th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Fremantle who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello.
Folks, each seed contains the genetic intelligence that will direct a plant's growth and development in response to conditions in its environment. As tillers of the soil, we judge some plant responses to be favorable, while others we find to be unfavorable. And as Washington suggests, we find bad seed to be a robbery of the worst kind, because it robs our pocketbook and it renders our work useless and it wastes a season of our time. Therefore, if we wish to survive and thrive, we must become judgmental when it comes to selecting seeds to start. This leads us to ask today, which seed should we start? And who better to ask than Gert Schneider of Gert Schneider Nurseries. Gert, welcome back to the Food Chain. Let's see, I think I have you there. Yeah, it's right into the microphone there. Bring it up to you. There you go. So it's been some time since we last worked together, Gert. Maybe, gosh, hundreds of episodes have passed under the bridge of the Food Chain. And folks, a little bit about Gert. I don't know of no person anywhere who has done more to paint the metropolitan landscape of the West with color than Gert Schneider of Gert Schneider Nurseries. Now, what Gert does is that he's a master propagator, which means he starts things and gets them going and then turns them over to commercial nurseries who grow them out and sell them to various whoever wants to plant ornamental plants. And as a matter of fact, right out in front of our radio station here in Santa Cruz, California, there are a half a dozen pink flowering strawberry trees. And as Gert was sitting here in the studio this morning looking out, he had a great big smile on his face because those are his babies, those pink flowering strawberry. Let's start right there, Gert. Tell us about where that pink flowering strawberry tree came from.
Most propagators of plants found it very difficult to propagate this plant, and then they came to me and asked me to try to find a method of propagating that plant. And it took us about 3 years to develop the method, how to propagate it from cuttings. And I venture to say that now we propagate more of those plants than anybody else in California, roughly 50,000 a year. And it's a small tree. It's probably a hybrid between the California Madrone and the Madrone that is native to the Canary Islands. Where the hybrid occurred is not known, but it is a very beautiful small tree with pink flowers. And it's one of the most sought after small evergreen trees today.
And it's perfect for municipalities that want to reinvigorate a metropolitan environment, which is what we had here. You know, the metropolitan community got together and said, we're going to make this street look a lot more livable and beautiful. So they came in with new curbs and gutters, and these pink flowering strawberry trees were perfect because they don't grow too tall. They maintain a kind of an ideal size, and they're green all the time, and they're beautiful. So, now where did you get the ability to propagate things, to start things, whereas you're the only one that figured out how to do it? So where did you get this knowledge?
Oh, I wish I could give you a clear answer to that. It's just that I'm challenged by the fact that it's difficult to do. Mm-hmm. And so we use a broad spectrum of tests when we work on something like that. And then finally, after two to four years, we finally found out how to do it right. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, the demand for this plant grew very big. And then, of course, the people I grow these things for, they pushed me to do more and more and more of them. And the way it is right now, we are barely able to produce enough plants to satisfy the demand of the market.
Now, Gerd, where did you get the ability to be a propagator? Who trained you to do the work of propagation?
Well, I studied horticulture and agriculture in Germany before I came over here. Mm-hmm. And my particular interest in those days was pomology. It's the science of the fruit science. But after I came to America, I became involved in propagation, and I have done it for so many years, and the actual field of propagation is so special and so unique that I dropped everything else and concentrated on propagation. And then you don't have to be a genius. After doing it years, you learn something how to do it, you know.
Well, you've always been a green thumb man. I mean, even when you were a child, right, growing up in Germany.
I don't know. I don't think I was a green thumb man. My mom always told me I was a big mouth man. But after the war, our interests changed from more high-flying expectations for the future to more elementary pursuits of maybe be connected to the land, and it's there where my interest in working with plants started. Yeah.
After the war?
After the war, yes.
Now, after the war, Germany needed to think about the ways of the soil, didn't it? You really had to start all over, almost from scratch.
Well, Germany needed a total renewal in all its aspects, in education, in thinking, in the economical field, and so my uncle owned a nursery, and after I got out of school, my mother was very concerned what to do with me. That was in the immediate post-Nazi area. And she said, we have to do something with this boy. And so they sent me in to serve an apprenticeship with my uncle. And I think in those days I was the most unsuitable apprentice for agricultural enterprise, because I was at a school where people were trained for entirely different things, you see. But after a while, I really learned to like horticulture, and I decided to stick with it for the rest of my life. And that is part of our heritage, is that we start something early in life, and if we catch on, we don't change.
Yeah.
It's considered bad form to switch around. And
it's kind of like starting the seeds, then.
Yes,
isn't it? You have to start the right seeds.
Yes, yes.
And in order to, otherwise you're wasting time.
Yes, that's right.
It's like Washington says, you're robbing yourself of everything. So it's important to start things off right. So as a propagator, in essence, your job is to start things and get them going for other people.
That's right.
And when we come back from this break that we're going to start right now, we're going to talk about how you go about selecting things to propagate and how that whole process works. Because as Washington says, it's very important to select the right thing. Otherwise, a bad seed can steal your money, steal your time, and steal your future. So it's so important to start the right thing. And we're starting off the day right with Gert Schneider of Gert Schneider Nurseries, master propagator, a man who has done more to paint the metropolitan landscape of the West than anyone else I know of, because he starts things and then turns them over to the big, huge wholesale nurseries that distribute them to smaller nurseries in the metropolitan communities throughout the West. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. Do stay tuned. We will be right back with Gert Schneider.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, when you drive up and down the streets of the metropolitan West and see all the color there, chances are very good that color came from our guest today, Gert Schneider, Gert Schneider Nurseries. Gert is a master propagator, which means he starts things off for the commercial growers of commercial horticultural growers of the West. And those growers then sell their starts to retail nurseries and to municipalities throughout the West. And those plants then become part of the color and the character of our urban and metropolitan landscapes. And, Gert, let me ask you, start off with something really innocuous, like, why ornamentals? I mean, food plants are obvious. We get our sustenance from food. What do we get from ornamental plants?
Oh, Michael, this is a principal question. Ornamental plants, they are food for the soul. And the rest is food for the stomach. And if we had no ornamental plants around us, it would be a desolate desert, and we would be very unhappy, and the quality of our life would be miserable without these surroundings. And so we do need the beauty of the natural environment to surround us. And I often have that fantasy that if each little plant that was born in our nursery had a tiny little yellow light on it, I would just enjoy myself driving around at night and picking out those little yellow lights to see where our products go, you know.
And they would be everywhere.
Well, we are putting out maybe, 3 million plants a year, you know, maybe. I'm not quite sure. Mm-hmm. I know how many we plant, but I don't want to tell you how many we lose in the process.
Sure. 3 million plants
but
a year?
3 million is a minimum, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. But you have to remember, those are small plants. And don't ask me what I get for them.
And they grow up to be big plants.
Yes.
Like those out in front of the radio station here, the pink flowering strawberry trees, which become a very beautiful part of our environment. Food for the soul instead of food for the stomach. And indeed, something that really changes how we see the world, too. When we have these plants in our world, they're kind of like pets, as it were, that make us feel much better. And they make you smile, don't they?
Yes, they do.
So you grow for commercial nurseries. Why do you grow the things that you grow? Why do you select things? I mean, you know, one of the popular sayings these days of political correctness is that when you make a disparaging remark about something, somebody's character or somebody's activity, they say, well, you're being judgmental, as if all activity and all responses are you know, part of God's creation and therefore equal. But you have to select things. Why do you select them?
Michael, there is a principal difference between being judgmental and using good judgment. Being judgmental means that you are opinionated, but in my situation, using good judgment is guided by what the people that buy my plants tell me what to do. And if somebody would come to me tomorrow and say, I want 5,000 plants of poison oak, and if you would pay me enough, I would put on gloves and we would grow 5,000 plants of poison oak. Now that shows you how broad-minded we are. Luckily, nobody ever came. But the principle of it is that I am using very little of my own liking or disliking of certain plants in what I grow. I follow the instructions of the people I'm doing it for.
Okay, but where do they get their instructions?
They are guided by this mundane motive of marketability.
Okay. Somebody has to say, I want that tree in my world, or I want that bush in my world.
Yes. Well, the principle, people who guide the popularity in plants are the landscape architects, I would say. At least they should be. And aside from that, it is the demand of those plants that the layman feels are suitable for his needs. And that is usually, he doesn't want to water them, he doesn't want to work with them, he wants to have flowers all year round, hopefully, and he wants them to be evergreen. So, and this is something that doesn't exist. But so, under the guidance of landscape architects and with the wisdom of the consumer, that will determine what we are growing.
So it's not unlike clothes fashion in clothes, right? Or even in foods. I mean, who decides what is popular and what is not? But at any rate, the commercial growers are the ones who really put themselves on the line, because they're the ones who have to go to you and say, Gerd, we need 10,000 of this plant. So they better have a good sense of what's marketable.
And they do. I would say that half of my customers are growers of considerable size, and that most of their products will end up in the big chain stores, mm-hmm. you see. So they have a notion of what they're going to take there, because it's rather repetitious, you know. And
things generally work from one season to the next.
That's right.
What about hot things that come and go? Can you give us an example of a hot plant?
I can tell you what is much in demand, and those are plants that are slightly drought resistant. Mm-hmm. We're talking California now.
Right.
And lavenders are extremely popular, and but I cannot really, they all are very popular. You know, when you do 10, 20, and 30,000 of one, they have to be popular, or we wouldn't do it, you know. And we have about, I think we have a dozen plants where we grow 75,000 of. And then we may have 100 plants we grow 50,000 of. I mean, 100 varieties. And then it goes down. We grow about, our menu has about 600 different plants on it. Yeah.
And that's one huge menu.
Ah, good size.
That's a good size menu.
Yes.
Now, do you grow anything because you like it yourself?
Luckily, I like those plants that sell, you see.
And, well dodged, Gerd. Well dodged.
I wish I could go and pick some plants that I can do just because I like to do them. But I am always reminded that I live in the real world.
Uh-huh.
And I have 15 employees that have to be paid.
And
they don't want dreams. They want a paycheck, you see. So I like those where I can do $50,000 and $60,000.
So instead of being judgmental,
yes,
you have to be a good judge.
Yes.
Okay, yes. Folks, there you go. This is The Food Chain, Michael Olson. Today we're talking about starting things. It is the season of new beginnings. It's time to start anew. And, of course, the way you do that is with a seed or with a start. And that's what we're doing today. How in the heck do we start good seeds? How do we start off in the right direction? And that's who we're talking with. That's why we're talking with Gerd Schneider, who is a master propagator of plants that decorate the metropolitan communities of the West with color. And you see how beautiful our communities are. Gerd's one of the people who are largely responsible for that. You're invited to participate. 800-624-2665-831-479-1080. Give us a call right back. Welcome back out there. We're talking about starting things anew. It is that time of year. And here's a thought from... But talk about starting things anew. Here's a thought from George Washington on why it's important to start anew in the right direction. Bad seed, he says, is a robbery of the worst kind. For your pocketbook not only suffers by it, but your preparations are lost and a season passes away unimproved. And so when we start off, we always want to start off in the right direction with something that gives us the greatest possibility of success in the future. And that's where we start with a good seed or a good start. Gerd Schneider is with us today, master propagator. Gerd is largely responsible for all the color you see in the metropolitan communities of the West. He starts things for commercial nurseries, who then sell them down the food chain to retail nurseries, to municipalities, to landscapers, and everybody else who decorates our world with color. And Gert's responsible for a lot of that color. Gert is a propagator. There are essentially two ways to start things, right? You start them with seeds or you start them sexually or asexually, right? Well, so let's start off with seeds, I guess. What a better way to do it. Seeds have all of the genetic intelligence you need, but how do you know which seed to select? Where do you go from there? How do you start that?
Well, principally, we have to differentiate between seed propagation and vegetative propagation. And vegetative propagation means non-sexual propagation, and that is usually done by cloning the plants, by making cuttings. The advantage of that is that we duplicate the plant in its entire genetic makeup. But we have clonal generations of plants. They have the same characteristics, but they also have the same vulnerabilities to disease. Now, if we uniformity and the ability to propagate is basically the desire on vegetative propagation. In seed propagation, it is usually done for the propagation of rootstocks, graft onto, or you can't do it vegetatively very easily. When you have a seed, a generation or a population of seed-grown plants, they are not genetically identical, of course. And you have a number of plants that may be inferior in their vigor or in being true to type. And, of course, you have the opportunity to eliminate those that are weak or not desirable. But one aspect of seed propagation is that normally a seed propagated plant has a primary root system. That means the root, as it appears out of the seed, has the tendency to go straight down and create and supply very good anchorage of the plant. While vegetatively propagated plants, primarily cutting grown plants, they have a secondary root system. That means a root system that it grows sideways out of the cutting, and it lacks this primary deep going root, and at times cutting grown plants that are cutting grown trees may not be as well anchored as seed grown plants. But the principal difference is vegetative propagation creates total uniformity. Sexual propagation or seed propagation does have normal genetic variability. The advantage of that is that there may be individuals in a population of seed plants that, because of their genetic variability, may have a greater resistance against certain diseases.
Mm-hmm.
While a clonal population, all originated from a single plant, may have the same vulnerability to disease, and there is no natural selection possible there.
So, for example, the pink flowering strawberry trees that you developed for the
I didn't develop it. I was just propagating it.
Just propagated it. I guess the good Lord developed it.
That's right.
Okay. So the pink flowering strawberry trees that you developed for the metropolitan communities, you did clonally.
That's right.
And because they're clonal, they're very uniform, which is very attractive to municipalities because they know what they're going to get.
Exactly.
All of these trees are going to do exactly the same thing, which is great if you're a municipality or a landscape architect working, because you know exactly what you're going to get. However, if a pink flowering strawberry bug happens to come upon the scene, it could wipe out the entire population because it might not have that genetic ability to withstand that.
Resistance, yes.
Resistance.
Luckily, so far, we haven't found that thing yet.
Right, right.
You see. And we are lucky in that. And you have to remember, I did exaggerate this vulnerability of the clonal population a little bit just to make the point.
Sure.
You
sure,
see.
Sure.
And mildew on roses. If you have a certain variety that is highly mildew susceptible, mildew is that disease with a white powdery stuff on the leaves. And if the environment in which that plant grows is highly susceptible to carry the mildew, then all of them will get it, you see. But if we would grow seedlings, which we don't, then we would have plants, some of them are
resistant.
Resistant and others are not, yes.
But isn't it in this population of seeds and the great variety where you find the characteristics that you want to clone?
Say it again, Michael.
Now, isn't it in the great variety where you find the individuals?
I get it. Most clonal varieties in ornamental plants, the term for it are cultivars.
Cultivars.
They are the result of spontaneous change in appearance. It is mutation.
Mm-hmm.
It is an unpredictable sudden change in the appearance of the plant.
And they're called spores, right?
You can call them a spore, yes. Now, a friend of mine is just desperately looking for plants that are normally green but have yellow striping in it. and he will go and find this and then cut the branch off and bring it to me and said, make us a plant, you see. No, what he doesn't know, yellowing in the leaves, even though it is a mutation, is a chlorophyll defect. And that can make vegetative propagation a little bit more difficult, you see.
And more interesting.
And also more interesting, and you get more money for it.
Folks, this is The Food Chain, Michael Olson. We're talking about starting things because that's the season we're in. It's time to start anew, and what better way to do that than with a conversation with Gert Schneider, master propagator, Gert Schneider Nurseries, the man that puts the color in the metropolitan areas of our West. Right back. Well, as George Washington seems to say, some seeds are good and some seeds are not so good, and some seeds are downright stubborn. And we're here talking about seeds with Gert Schneider, master propagator. Gert, why is it that some seeds have difficulty in coming to life? I mean, you put them in, you try to germinate them, and they just don't work. What happens there?
Yes, for some reasons that we cannot really always explain, there is an inherent resistance to germination in certain plants. And it is usually such that the higher tree-like, among higher tree-like plants, the resistance to germination is more prevalent. And in order to make these seeds to come to life, which is germination, they have to be exposed to totally adverse conditions. And some of these conditions are extreme. Among native plants, if I think of the California redbud, I have to take that seed and soak it in boiling water and then let it cool off for 24 hours, cool off. And that isn't enough. Then the seed wants to be exposed to cold, moist, unpleasant condition at about 40 degrees for another 30 to 40 days. And then all of a sudden, after they have undergone this treatment, and you plant the seeds, they will very happily germinate. And and it is so surprising. And that holds true to many trees. I can't enumerate them all. It is in so many.
There's no biological...
Oh, yes. Scientifically, the process can be explained by breaking down of inhibitors in the seed. It's a physiological process that takes place, mm-hmm. But it has to do probably with preventing seeds of certain variety to germinate prematurely on the ground, and then frost killing the young seedling. So there are these inhibitors built in, you know. And but I very often like to compare this this extreme hardship that seeds have to go through before they come alive symbolically with the human condition, you know. And I remember there is this one of the previous governors of Arizona, I forgot the name. He wrote a book under the title "Adversity is My Angel," you know. And I'm always thinking about this, how adverse conditions can lead to these positive results, you know. And this is part of the renewal concept that
Absolutely.
We originally were talking about
Absolutely.
Today.
Absolutely.
And that is so true for nations and, of course, also for individuals. This renewal from adversity to growing into something positive, which in humans almost is a daily requirement, as I see it, you see.
That we need something to challenge.
Yes, and sometimes you have to experience adversity in all its many forms, disappointment. You could enumerate. Now, you can go two ways. You can throw up your arms and say, everything is against me. And you can use the easy way out, which is, well, our famous pursuit of happiness, which can lead to renewal, but it often leads to the end of a dark alley, you see. But the human renewal is just... I'm getting sidetracked now.
Well, are you, though? I mean, are you getting sidetracked? Or you work with plants all the time. You work with life. You bring things to life. And as in that process, don't you think about people too? I mean,
yes. I can't help thinking about it, because if we may change to renewal for a moment, mm-hmm. is that okay?
Sure.
Renewal is such a delicate process that can go one way or the other. It is depending on the soul of the individual. You know, here, look, for example, if hardship is the key to renewal, Germany, after the First World War, experienced hardship in the extreme. We don't have to talk about why. There came a man and said, oh, I will change all this. But this man, and you know who it was, these people had no concept for renewal in the sense as we as Christians look at it. And it led to total world disaster at the end in 1945. Lives were ruined, cities were ruined, people were ruined. And that is when renewal goes, when change goes in the wrong way, you know. And then after the war came Konrad Adenauer, the first German chancellor, and he was a strict
Hold that thought. Right back, folks. Do stay tuned. Well, folks, we're back. We're talking about renewal. And we started with the renewal of plants, of course, because it is that season. And we've progressed to the renewal of people, because that's what we're really all about. With Gerd Schneider, Gerd was talking about Germany after World War I and the pursuit of the wrong kind of happiness and the wrong kind of renewal. And after World War II, there was a different kind of pursuit, Gerd.
Yes, I believe that it is the character and the belief and the faith of the individual who initiate the renewal. They will guide it in the right direction and see what happened. Who were the key? I will just bring two people that guided Germany up to the way up to light. One was Konrad Adenauer, an excellent, God-fearing politician. And we have to admit, the other men who helped more than anybody else to get Germany back on its feet is who I know as General Marshall, the American, I don't know what his position was at the time, who initiated the Marshall Plan out of compassion for the people. And here were two men, this godly Konrad Adenauer and General Marshall, who with his compassion for Germany brought us back to life again. Yes.
And for you, coming back to life, a big part of that was the growth of the plants and the growth of the soil, and how it brought you back into something very reasonable that you could do to rebuild your nation.
Yes, but Michael, I know we are coming to the end of our time. There is one very important thing, a point I like to make. There are four points that will guide renewal in the right direction. And as Christians, we should not be ashamed to admit to that. Number one, is, like it says in the Proverbs, the fear of God is the beginning of all wisdom. The Ten Commandments, the Sermon on the Mount, and then in a more secular fashion, what our great philosopher and poet Goethe said about life and living. I will say it in German first. Edel sei der Mensch, hilfreich und gut. Translated into English is, noble be man, helpful and good. These are the motives and the guidelines to renewal in the right direction. And if one, of course, comes from a tumultuous historical time and gets down to the earth where I ended up, then you are susceptible to renewal in the right direction.
And staying close to the earth.
Right? Yes, yes.
Wow, folks, this has been a remarkable addition to the Food Chain Radio program. Gert Schneider, an old friend of mine, who helped provide a foundation for my book, Metro Farm. I found him one day flying a little Cessna over Aptos, California, and I went down to visit him, and I said, told him about how I wanted to write a book, and he looked at me and he said, Michael, I have absolutely no time for you at all. Get out of here. Leave right now. But I persisted, and he persisted, and pretty soon Gert Schneider was in my book, Metro Farm, and lo and behold, I was in his church. So that's the way it worked. Thank you for tuning in. This has been The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Gert Schneider. And you, what are you going to plant? What kind of seed are you going to start this year? Just a thought. Thank you for tuning in. Join us next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on The Food Chain. Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.